Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here. Want to have a little bit of fun today with tomorrow being the 4th of July holiday. Very much for many people, kind of the signal that summer is here. Everyone is off of school at that point. You know, the weather's usually gorgeous. I know Sal put up a poll today. Like, are you more of a fireworks person? Do you kind of enjoy a good show? Or are you like, leave me alone, I'm trying to sleep kind of deal? I will tell you, I enjoy a good show. I'm getting much, much closer to I'm trying to sleep. And the only reason why, Josh, the only reason why, it goes on for like a week and a half.
Who cares?
Oh, I can't stand it.
You know how long
it.
The Revolutionary War went on?
I think 4 years.
Yeah.
I think 4 years.
You know who won that war?
U.S. with the help of France.
Yes. And you know why? Because we know how to blow stuff up.
But man, it goes on for like a week and a half, and I'm just like, oh, okay. Like, I'm tired. I've had enough. I get it. It's cool for 5 minutes.
To be fair, I did hear fireworks on Saturday and Sunday this weekend. So, this past weekend.
Right.
So, but hey, I was into it. I was like, yeah, let's go. I was watching it. I loved it.
I'm good for like a day, and that's about it.
What's your nationality again? Where are you from?
Like, are you talking like American?
No, yeah,
like,
where are you from? Where were you born?
I'm in Buffalo.
Yeah. Yeah, where's Buffalo?
America.
Yeah, yeah. You're gonna sit in a lawn chair and you're gonna watch the fireworks all week long and you're gonna be happy about it.
All week long, man. That is.
You have so many different variations of fireworks. You have big ones. You have little ones. You have sparklers. You have firecrackers. You have all this different stuff. I mean, come on, they're great.
And I'm good after like a day.
No.
I'm good after
no,
a day. Yeah.
No.
Now, in terms of traditions, this is a holiday that for me is very much based in tradition because for Christmas, Thanksgiving, stuff like that, different families host and all that. And there's not necessarily something that always goes on outside of, you know, Thanksgiving watching football. But with the 4th, there's typically the Nathan's hot dog eating contest, which I feel bad. Now I'm going to be really negative. I can't stand that either.
I'm right there with you.
I saw Joey
that
Chestnut.
That's
without.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's okay to be negative about because I just – it's like –
yeah, I saw Joey Chestnut was out, and I'm like, cool. It gives me even less of a reason to watch it. Because usually you'll end up watching and be like, is he going to break a record? No,
right.
I did. That's insane.
And it,
now I'm like, I don't care.
And it's like, it ruins hot dogs for me. Because I don't want to eat a hot dog after I see people just engulf hot dogs for 15 minutes.
No, it is the worst thing ever. And it always, because it's the 4th, it falls where like there's nothing else going on. Mm-hmm. Like tomorrow there's a Copa America game. We're into the quarterfinals. I think it's Argentina versus Ecuador. It's at 9 at night.
Ugh.
Like if it was in the afternoon or we had a Euro game in the afternoon, it's like,
true,
oh, cool.
But you know? Most people are out and about doing stuff during the day
yes,
tomorrow and
absolutely.
Things like that. Because everyone's off from work and you know, it's –
you're
it's
like
one of those
out.
Days where you just hang out with your family, hang out with your friends, go to the beach, go to the park, go, I don't know. I know people go to like amusement parks and stuff too, if that's your thing. But I just don't see the appeal of the hot dog. I never have.
And I never will.
I don't get it.
Like people are welcome to try to like talk me into
and
it. 803-0550 is the number to call. You're not gonna though.
It's not even
it's
just
a losing
hot
effort.
Dogs. It's not even just hot dogs. It's chicken wings. It's pie.
Any
it's
of them.
Anything.
Not
it's
a fan.
Just,
not
you're
a fan.
You're wasting good food.
Yep.
Like, but I know you understand you're eating it, but you're eating it to just eat it.
For competition,
you're
yeah.
not even eating it because you're hungry.
Or even because it's good. Or you're
I mean,
trying
hot dogs,
something.
Hot dogs are good.
No, but I mean, like, you're not even like necessarily trying anything. It's just, it's gross. I don't like it at all.
Oh, yeah, you don't even taste it.
Like,
can't
it's
stand
just,
whoop.
Cannot stand it. But as you brought up there, this holiday is very much, you know, you're kind of just hanging out with your family, the whole thing. And that's kind of where mine comes in. It's nothing special, but it's always that I know on the 4th, my uncle hosts a party and everyone goes out there. And even if it's like last minute where everyone's like, are we still doing this? Like, is it still good? Oh, okay, it's still going on. Like, you know what's happening.
Yeah, you kind of keep it open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's something that I've always kind of enjoyed doing. Because for a long time, that's how I saw that side of the family was the 4th of July picnic, the whole thing. And now it's much more regular that I'm seeing the side of the family. So I don't want to even say it's lost like a little bit of its luster. But now it's just like, oh, yeah, we're all hanging out on, you know, effectively a Saturday. Yes, it's Thursday, but, like, it's how it is. Like, we all get together, have a few drinks, good food. And it's just, it's nice. It's one of those holidays that I do like the 4th so much because there's not a ton of expectations. And that's the best. Like, Christmas and even Thanksgiving, there's a lot of expectations.
And there's a lot of planning.
Easter, there's a lot of expectations.
Right.
The 4th is like, dude, just come hang out. You know, If you want to have a few drinks, bring your own. We'll have some here. You want to bring some food? Great.
If you're busy, no worries.
No worries. It's one. There's no expectations.
Right.
And it's so relaxing, and it kind of fits summer perfectly.
With Christmas, it's like, okay, at 6:05, we're doing this. At 9:27, you have to be here this. And it's like, oh, that's a lot. And maybe that's just my Christmas, but
The older, like, I've gotten, the more it's become that. Or yeah, it's just like,
because
okay.
You're all over the place. And then you introduce, if you have a significant other, you have to go to their family's events and your family's events. And you have to work the two together. And it's the 4th of July is just like, yeah, well, hey, we're celebrating freedom. You're free to do whatever.
You just go. Just hang out.
Just have fun.
So I love that. Do you do anything kind of like special?
Back when my cousins and I were little, I told this a little earlier on the Extra Point Show. We used to do family parties where, you know, we'd all get together and we'd have a good time. We'd do some light fireworks, nothing, you know, crazy or whatever. And then maybe if we finished early, we'd go watch a fireworks show. Like, I grew up where you can see for miles, so we could just sit and watch fireworks all around us because you could see forever. Sometimes we'd drive around too if there wasn't much going on out near us, but I was never like, go to a fireworks show at like a park and sit and watch. I was always either someone in my family's going to do it, or we're going to watch from afar, like off in the distance, we see a bunch of fireworks going off. Mm-hmm. I was never like, we have to go to a town park and find a spot with a blanket and sit down with snacks and stuff. Like, it just wasn't really an appeal for me or really my parents either.
I think I only did it maybe once or twice.
Yeah, and it's just that's where it feels you're creeping into like this like plan of like, I have to go here at this time and do this and do that. And yeah, but lately, like the past few years, it's been harder because like me and my cousins are like growing up now. We all have so much more going on in our lives and everything like that. It's a lot harder to get the family together. So usually it's just we'll do stuff for Christmas and Thanksgiving, and like, if we can do something for a holiday like 4th of July or Easter or something like that, then it's, you know, it's like how you said, like kind of like off the cuff, like, oh, hey, we're doing something today. Oh, cool. So are we. Let's combine it.
Best part of the holiday.
Yeah.
Best part.
But yeah, I don't really have anything like tradition wise. I mean, obviously hot dogs and hamburgers, you know, that's a must. You have to have that. But
it's really
other than that,
it.
Yeah, hey, just have a good time. Relax.
I'm not really many sporting events, though, and I could be wrong. I don't think Wimbledon often falls like within this run, I guess. I think it did a few years ago, if I remember correctly.
It does this year.
But it is definitely this year, and like this is something we've had it on the TV the entire time here. I'm trying to get into it, and I kind of am starting to, mainly because Naomi Osaka, we were talking about it, former number one female tennis player from a few years ago, she got knocked out in the second round, and it does kind of feel like, like this is a huge thing. But also, along with that, Jessica Pegula, who is going to be playing on the Olympic team, I think one of five females who is going to be on the Olympic team for the United States, she's playing her match tomorrow. She's the fifth-ranked woman in the world. That's kind of cool. Like, she is somebody that I every time there's a big tennis, I don't want to say match, but tournament that comes up, one of these majors, I do usually check in on what she's doing.
Do you know who she played yesterday?
I know her last name is Kruger.
Yep.
She's not related to Ralph Kruger.
Nope.
Okay.
But the scoreboard, I wanted to see if you were going to take the bait there. But no, the scoreboard reading Kruger Pegula was the funniest thing in the world.
Boy.
Like, I did a triple take when I looked at the screen. I was like, who is she playing? What's happening right now? Like, no, I mean, I don't think they're related. I
do not think so.
I'd be absolutely shocked if they were. And, it'd be pretty cool if they were, actually.
I'll be good.
So Jessica Pegula played Ashlyn Kruger yesterday. And like I said, it was quite the shock when I looked up at the screen and I was like, who's playing what now?
What is going
what
on?
What sport is this? but no, it is. And she's very good. Like, it's interesting to see her at this tournament ranked as number 5 in the world.
Now, she's had an interesting run. She's never won a Grand Slam. Every single one of them, though, of the Grand Slams, those obviously being the Australian Open, French Open, Wimbledon, and the U.S. Open, in terms of her single results, I just had these. Single results, yes. Quarterfinals, that's the furthest she's gone in all of them. for the Australian Open. She's done that in 21, 22, 23. French Open, she's done that in 22. Wimbledon, she's done that in 23. And U.S. Open, she's done that in 22. She has never made it past a quarterfinal. And now she's kind of hitting her peak here these last few years.
Yeah.
That's why she's become much more interesting, for me at least, to watch. Not necessarily
watching her yesterday, she handled that match.
And like you're seeing, like, she's like, okay, now she's coming into her prime and she's really become a player in the world. Now it is kind of like keeping an eye of, like, is she going to win one of these major tournaments?
Right. And for those that don't know, in tennis, it's you win sets to win the match. So in a set, you're playing, and it looks weird because it says 40 to nothing.
Yeah.
It's 15 points is each.
Yep.
Point you don't scored. Say 40 to nothing. You say 40 love.
All right. Sorry.
It's the worst.
Again.
The worst.
We freed ourselves from Britain for this reason. We don't have to do this anymore. But no. And then when you get to 45, you win the game. And then you get a point. If you get to 6, I think, you win the set.
Yep.
And then once you win 3 sets, you win the match.
That has been a thing, too, that...
I think it might be different for men's and women's, because we're watching the men right now. No, if you win 3 sets for the women, or 2 sets for the women, 3 for the men. Because these guys are playing right now, and one of them won twice, but didn't win the match. But Jessica Pegula yesterday won 2 sets and won the match. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a little different for men and women.
But I'm trying to get a little bit more into tennis, just because when these Grand Slams do come up, like, it is always interesting, and they're on all day, and it's
they take over ESPN.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, this has gone – obviously
– They started at, like, 6 in the morning.
Yeah, and obviously it's Wimbledon, but
– Yeah.
This is – like, you don't see any of the normal shows. It's just right over top of it, which partially because of the fact that there's not much going on right now. But another part is because of how big of the spectacle it is.
Yeah. But I'm trying to get into it because I've gotten a lot into golf recently in the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. And that is something that is very much based off the major tournaments.
Yep.
This is some, the Grand Slam tournaments.
Oh, right. It's basically a championship every time you watch.
And so I'm trying to get into these. I will tell you, though, Josh, as much as I could watch, like, the same group of golfers golf for, like, 4 hours and, like, really enjoy it, especially if the course is beautiful, there is something to it for me of, like, watching the same match going on for, like, 2.5 hours. And by the end of it, I'm just like, man, I feel for you guys. I'm sorry. I just want it to end for the poor players.
Yeah, and that's where it's funny, too, because, like I was saying, that Jessica Pegula –
You got through it.
I got through it. But her match the other day, it was done in, like, 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm. But that was considered incredibly fast.
Right, but then other times you'll see – they'll go on for like 3 hours.
And that to me is just insane. And it also kind of plays into the whole, like, just how in shape you have to be a tennis player. Of course, like, you see how fast these serves are. But
yeah, you see a little scoreboard behind him right now. This guy's about to serve the ball, and it read as 104 miles an hour. His serve.
And that's considered lesser because, like, either his serve before or the guy before him was 121. And they're able to do this for 3 hours.
This is, like, those are faster than NHL slap shots.
Mm-hmm.
The hardest NHL slap shot's, like, what, 109?
I think so, yep.
Maybe, actually, it might be a lot different now. I remember it being around 109.
All right, you're looking it up, so I won't. But, so.
It is.
Do you get it?
108.
Oh, okay. So you were, I mean, you were
close. That was set back in... Oh, no. Oh, no, that's as of 2024. It was set in 2012 by Chara.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So that's what I'm remembering. It was him and Shea Weber going back and forth for a while, and Chara, like, set it at 108.8, and it's been that way ever since.
Yeah, well,
so
yeah.
Eventually, it's going to get broken.
But yeah, I am trying to get into Wimbledon, and that's mainly just because it's on the TV consistently. Well, not just Wimbledon, but tennis as a whole, because it's on the TV consistently when you see these Grand Slam tournaments come up. And it is getting a little bit easier because you do have Jessica Pegula, but I think there's also just – there is personalities that are kind of taking over post, some of these older players who are kind of fading out, Federer, Serena Williams and such, even the Williams sisters. So it is kind of nice. Just it has never been a sport that has grabbed me Like,
well, that's how I was with golf for years.
Until you played it.
And then I played it, and I'm like, wow, I really want to watch this. And I was like, wow, I really like this.
Mm-hmm.
And
I have not gotten there yet.
I don't think I'm going to get there with tennis.
I have not gotten there yet.
I don't think I'll get there.
Mainly, I will tell you, though, it does fall into the point now where I'm just waiting for the Olympics.
Yeah.
I am just waiting for the Olympics. We'll have the Open Championship, British Open, whatever you want to call it. That's starting July 14th. So that's coming up next weekend. I'm excited for that. I'll watch that, the last major of the season. I really am, though, at a point, just like looking forward to the Olympics. Especially, too, the hockey schedule has just flown by. Like Paul said, like come Friday, it kind of stops. It just stalls.
Yeah, there's like nothing.
It's you're waiting maybe for a trade or a move to happen. A lot of it gets done on day one.
Mm-hmm.
For, you know, the Sabres and hockey.
Well, I mean, like I brought up yesterday, too. I remember the Sabres trading for Colin Miller, like, the end of July.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the beginning of August. So these things can happen, but it's so much less all at once. Like, it's not where you're having these GMs constantly on the phone with each other. This week, yes. And this week, I bet you there's foundations of trades being set that we're going to see in 2-3 weeks. And it's just going to take time for these GMs. I feel like everyone gets under the understanding of, hey, this is something we're going to put a pin in and come back. I'm going to take a vacation with my family because the season's over and we need to all relax.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like every GM is probably just like, yeah, let's do that.
Yep.
like, you know, like, and I'm sure there's some that aren't, and I'm sure that there's some that never do, but that's just kind of how it goes sometimes with these sports that we see in the summertime is these leagues aren't always happening like we think they are. There's not always trade rumors that can get churned out. There's not always conversations happening.
There is real downtime.
Right. Look at the Tua contract right now.
Yeah.
There's no known progress on it.
Yeah. I think it's the one big difference between like college and pros is that college, there really is no downtime.
Mm-hmm. Especially you're recruiting, you're talking to people, you're hiring, you're firing, you're playing.
You have spring ball, you have summer ball, end of the season,
mm-hmm.
and you're recruiting that time consistently. I would imagine, and I wouldn't say it's bad by any means, that like this last month, Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott, all of the Bills coaches, I mean, like they openly said it, like, take your time. Like,
right.
Reset the whole thing, because then for 7-8 months,
you're doing nothing but football.
Yeah, and it's
and that's why, like, what you brought up before, too, is there still could be a trade.
Mm-hmm.
That the Bills could make.
Sure.
It just might not be fully there yet. And, you know, these guys are just taking their time on it, which is fine. I think we all get to a point where we just want something to happen so mm-hmm. we can see what happens.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, oh, finally. Like, look, this guy's there now, you know?
You get right? a conclusion to it.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of the same with hockey because of how fast hockey happens. In terms of free agency and trading and the draft and all that stuff, the NFL's not like that. That's where the NFL's more spaced out, and you get free agent signings 1-3 days after the main day, like big ones.
Yeah.
Whereas in the NHL, all the big ones were done in the first 5 minutes.
It was done very quickly.
And it's not like that every year, but most years it's like that.
And I kind of, I'm not going to lie to you, man, I've really enjoyed the condensed hockey schedule, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't love that hockey, you know, the Stanley Cup was awarded and like the next week we had the draft. I didn't love that. I would love for that, you know, hockey to be pushed back. Let's not be playing in late June.
But in terms
of like, let's do everything now, as a fan, I kind of ate that up. I really did.
Yeah.
Now, did I expect like maybe like bigger decisions have to be made for teams like Florida? Sure. But I like the idea of such a high, high moment of emotions. I mean, you saw it on Paul Maurice.
Yeah,
with both the speeches and the look on his face as the head coach and Zito as well, their GM. But to know that like the next day, everything had to switch on a dime.
And it's to know that three
we've now got to make decisions.
To know that a week later, or even less than a week later, Brandon Montour is no longer on your team.
Yeah,
and he just won a Stanley Cup with you a week ago.
And it was a major factor in that.
Yeah, and it's. That's really crazy. I don't think – I'm trying to think of what last year's was like because it was not that close. It was not that quick of a turnaround.
And I loved it. I loved it this year for that reason of just it forced everything to happen so, so quickly.
I do wonder, is that an impact on how these teams made their trades.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say that the Sabres had another week before the draft, or another week between draft and free agency.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what would have happened in that time span, in that, you know, period. Would there have been more time where more dialogue would have happened, especially more so between the Stanley Cup and the draft? Because the draft and free agency always follow each other very quickly. Mm-hmm. It's always the end of June and July 1st is free agency no matter what. That's how it's always been. I wonder, though, if you had a week between the playoffs and the draft, you get a lot more breathing room for those two teams that were just in the Stanley Cup final, and even for the teams that were in the Eastern Conference final and Western Conference final. But you also just get more time to digest and talk and figure these things out, whereas this time you had 5 days between the end of the Stanley Cup final and the draft. Not even 5 days, I don't think, right?
I don't think
when
so.
When was Game 7? Game 7 was on
that
Monday.
That was on Monday, yeah.
Yeah, and the draft was on Friday.
Friday, yeah.
So you had 4 days for, especially if you're Florida, to, hey, we won. All right, let's get on a plane and go to Vegas. And, well, should we trade for a pick? Should we not trade for a pick? We got to sign Sam Reinhart. We got to sign Brandon Montour. What are we going to do? Whereas if you give them a week, even with other teams too, you can field phone calls. You can make phone calls. Hey, how do you like pick 11? It's pretty good, right? Sam Bennett looks pretty good. We'd like him on the team. All right, we'll give you some time to think about it because you got to sign some other free agents. We'll come back to you in a few days. You didn't have that luxury.
No,
if you're
you
a GM,
fast.
Whether it's Kevin Adams or not, any GM in the NHL didn't have that time to sit and think. And granted, some of them have been sitting there since March or April, but you didn't have that time to talk to other GMs and make these things happen. You just kind of had to have ideas in place, and if they didn't work out, you just move on.
I only find it now interesting because we did hear Kevin Adams on Sabres Live that Thursday, before the day before the draft, outright say that like he thought he had moves that were done,
right,
that fell through. And it's like, if there was another week, does dialogue continue? Or did it become, we've got to pivot? We've got to pivot because everything's happening now. We're going to make these picks now. Where instead, if it's like, if you had actual, like, you know, 14 days, 10 days, but, you know, after the season when everyone's starting to ramp up, maybe there really is more dialogue. I do think potentially like the condensed schedule that it was probably did force some conversations to end more quickly. You heard it with Kevin Adams having to kind of adjust his answer as well when he was talking about, like, if players don't want to play in Buffalo, I just move on. He had to adjust and go, well, you know, you don't want to kind of, you know, tiptoe around it and
you don't want to waste time
and
basically
spin your wheels.
Yeah.
Where, yeah, that probably was true this year of, like, we've got to figure out now. Like this is going to be done quickly. Like, well, we have to go now.
And I brought up Florida specifically there because Sam Bennett was one of those players that was highly talked about as the playoffs went on of, like, well, Sam Reinhart's playing at an elite level.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to lose him. But Sam Bennett is also one of your best players of this playoffs. You probably can't extend him next year if you extend Reinhart and Montour and all these other players. And ultimately, they only ended up extending Reinhart. But is that a guy that was part of one of these trades?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, if you're Florida and you're trying to clear cap space to potentially sign Sam Reinhart, Sam Bennett was one of those people you were talking about. And if you're the Sabres, that's a player that you can go for.
It's somebody I've really wanted
to
go for.
But that's a very tight window to try to get a hold of a GM that's celebrating a Stanley Cup championship.
Yeah.
And there's
also the human element of, like, yeah, like,
obviously we don't know if that's who the Sabres were trying to make a trade with or whatever, but it still could have very well applied to other teams where other teams were trying to trade with Florida and the Sabres were trying to trade with those teams. And it's there's so much conversations going on in a 3-day period. Things get left behind. Things get forgotten. Things get
you have to move on
moved
much
on
quicker.
From. Right. So
In a fan sense, I really enjoyed it, but maybe it's like, oh, you actually would have preferred having another week there because then maybe more does get done, especially you're sitting there with the Sabres. We talked to Paul about it. We talked about it a lot yesterday of just you have to be able to sell the team because for 13 years, it's been a bad product.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there really hasn't been enough time to correctly be able to do that or to efficiently be able to do that because everyone's like, no, we got to move on now. Like this guy... pitch this to him and let's just go.
With free agency, it's a little different because, like I said, free agency is always going to be that quick behind the draft.
But I mean more trades.
Right. Or more trades for a player that's going to expire. mm-hmm. like we saw with Jake Gensel.
Yep.
The Lightning did that and pretty much had a contract in place. But I wonder if we'd see that more if you had another week
mm-hmm.
between the end of the season and the draft. If you could see players get traded for, you give a fifth round pick or a third round pick like Tampa did to the team and say, hey, we just want exclusive rights to negotiate with him
mm-hmm.
before everyone else can.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's
super interesting. That'd be something,
and then, you know, dynamics of those trades would change. Mm-hmm. It would go from, oh, yeah, just give me a fourth because I don't know if you can actually sign this guy. It would go from that to, well, hey, you're probably going to sign this guy, so give me at least a first.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it'll be just like a regular trade then.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, hey, it's a kind of a throwaway.
And getting a lot of unknown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I liked it, but now the more I'm thinking about it, I'm like, maybe it would have been better if we had like at least just another week to kind of see what Adams and his staff could do. And again, they could still make a trade, absolutely. But for right now, it does kind of seem like we're settling into this is probably the team. Much better bottom six and a lot of ifs kind of everywhere else. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt, got to take a quick time out here. Got about another half hour left of the show as we'll have Schopen the Bulldog at 3 o'clock. No Sabres Live or One Bills Live the rest of the week with the 4th of July holiday tomorrow. No local shows tomorrow as well. But again, still taking your calls. 803-0550 is the number to call. You're listening to WGR.
They were using him over the middle of the field, getting favorable matchups because of his position. And I feel like if that can continue and it can continue evolving as a reliable option, that's going to be so meaningful for this offense. I think Joe Brady, you mentioned the Chiefs and their condensed formations. I really think you want to borrow heavily from some of the things that they did to get Travis Kelce open. I just feel like Dalton Kincaid can be used very similarly.
There is Mina Kimes. Me and Josh were talking about that about an hour ago. I had seen a clip of it real quick, and that's sort of what was being mentioned a little bit there. I always get really nervous, though, Josh, when the comparisons to Travis Kelce do get brought up. I mean, there, Mina's just kind of bringing up like they should borrow heavily from what Kansas City was doing with Kelce,
mm-hmm.
but then kind of also said, like, I could see Kincaid doing really well with it, and it makes me... I don't want to say nervous or uncomfortable, but I guess those are kind of the right words there just because, to me, he is arguably the greatest tight end of all time. Out of the 1,100 reception seasons a tight end has had, he has had, I think, four of them.
1,100 reception receiving yards, you mean?
No, 100 reception seasons for tight ends. He's had four.
I thought you said 1,100.
Oh, no,
like,
sorry.
I was like, that's impossible. But he can't have that many catches.
No, but he's had four of them. Like, he has been the most dominant force as a tight end, and especially consistently, we've seen in NFL history, and you even saw it last year, where much of his regular season, it looked uncomfortable, it didn't look right. I mean, he's dealing with an injury right at the start of the season. He missed mm-hmm. the Detroit game. It never felt... correct. It felt like we were at the end of Travis Kelce's career, or at least definitely his dominance. And then the playoffs happened, and he was exceptional throughout him.
Right. Well, and I think, too, it's not – it's like you're, like, cautiously optimistic,
mm-hmm.
right? Because having a player on your team that's being compared to the greatest tight end of all time, or probably the greatest tight end of all time, is an exciting prospect, but it's still just a prospect.
But it's also why, like, I hate comparisons when we're getting to the draft in any sport, where they're immediately like, this player's a mix between Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, and you're like,
who?
Be what? Serious?
Yeah, like, right. Like that play. Then if that's what that player is being compared to, then they should be the best quarterback of all time right out of the gate.
And that's why I hate it. It's just it gets very simplistic.
Like you can compare play styles, you can compare mm-hmm. traits and like what the player possesses, but player comparables are just to say like, hey, they're kind of like this person, they're kind of like that person. It's never a, yes, I compared him to Tom Brady, so he will be Tom Brady. Or, mm-hmm. hey, this guy plays like Travis Kelce, he can do the same thing as, like, well, actually, no, that's more of what a comparison should be.
I think
it's
more correct, yeah.
But it's not a... oh, he looks like Travis Kelce. He's going to do what Travis Kelce does. No, it's a, yeah, he plays like him, so he might be able to play. That's kind of what she's saying
there. And that's why I like what Mina was saying there. Is like, it's just something the Bills should really think about, that
right.
they should try to do it, because what he was showing Dalton Kincaid, we mean, at the end of last year was really positive towards what the Chiefs have been able to do with Kelce. I mean, for me specifically, why the Chiefs have been able to keep this run of dominance, keep the offense moving at a high clip. I mean, last year was a little tough, but a lot of that was also Kelce was not performing that well, is the fact that while, yes, they did trade away Tyreek Hill, arguably at the height of his powers, Travis Kelce was there still. He was still realistically the number one target. He was still the safety blanket and a big play player for Mahomes. And you look at last year, Josh, his final three games, because he was inactive for week 17, his final three games, he didn't have over 50 yards. Against New England, he had 7 targets, 5 catches, 28 yards. Against the Raiders, he had 7 targets, 5 catches, 44 yards, no touchdowns. And then against Cincinnati, 4 targets, 3 catches for 16 yards. And then, of course, inactive week 17. He then comes into the playoffs against Miami right away in the wild card game. 10 for 7 for 71 yards. Then against Buffalo, 6 for 5, 75 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Mind you, the Miami game too, real quick, that's like in like the negative,
very cold,
20 degree wind chill kind of
very cold,
where Patrick Mahomes' helmet breaks because of how cold it is.
Oh yeah.
So,
and then the final two games of the playoffs, the AFC Championship game and the Super Bowl, is maybe his best performances nearly of the year. Against Baltimore, 11 targets, 11 receptions, 116 yards, and a touchdown. And then against San Francisco, 10 targets, 9 receptions, and 93 yards. He turned it on right when he needed to. And was he awful the whole year? No. He still had some pretty darn good games, namely against, well, actually.
I don't know. You can ask my fantasy team from last year. He let me down a lot.
But week 6 and 7, he was really, really, really good. Like, kind of what you remember. In week 6 against Denver, he had 9 targets, 9 catches, 124 yards. And then against the Chargers, 13 targets, 12 catches, 179 yards, and 1 touchdown. And you look at this season, considered a down year for Kelce, 121 targets and 93 catches, 984 yards, and 5 touchdowns.
What if that's Dalton Kincaid's stat line next year?
So that's kind of what I'm thinking. This is also a player that missed 2 games.
Ooh, okay.
He missed week 1, and he missed the final week.
If he doesn't miss those 2 games, what does he have, 135 targets?
On the high end, we can say 135. Yeah. And probably comfortably over 1,000 yards, and maybe another touchdown. But he only had 5, so
right. But okay, so let's say 130 targets, and let's say he made 7 more catches.
So we add 100.
We add 9 targets, and we add 7 catches because that's basically the rate he was catching them at.
Mm-hmm.
And then just over 1,000 yards, and still 5 touchdowns. If that's Dalton Kincaid's stat line next year, how are you feeling?
It's weird because, like, ultimately probably not that great.
Right.
I'm feeling solid about it, but I think there's a reason why for much of last year we were all sitting there going, yeah, it's not working. There's something like Kelce's either not healthy, they're not using him correctly, or but just age got to him.
To be fair, though, that's how we looked at Kelce. If we look at Kincaid,
it's much different.
Because it's his second year. He's making a huge jump. He's adding 400 yards receiving. He's adding a lot more targets, a lot more catches, and 3 more touchdowns. So I think that's definitely the perception of the player itself in terms of what they've done before. For Kincaid, that would be an incredible season, I think. I think if he comes out and gets just over 1,000 yards, 100 catches, and 5 touchdowns, I think that's a great year. I think that's really good. Now, it depends on how the rest of the Bills' offense did. It'd be a good individual season. But if the whole team doesn't thrive because of that, then obviously it's not as valuable.
Yes.
When Kelce was not there, though, the Chiefs were not there.
I mean, you saw it. Like, I mean, of last year, yes, they were scoring still.
But that was because Patrick Mahomes was just transporting the ball into the hands of the receiver somehow. He had Travis Kelce, and that's it, pretty much. And he was still making it work because he's Patrick Mahomes. Josh Allen can do that to an extent. That's where I'll give Mahomes a little bit of the edge. Allen is great, but Mahomes has that little bit more. And I think that's how it always has been and always will be. But with what the Chiefs had last year, if Kelce did that and they still won the Super Bowl, obviously Kelce came in the playoffs and performed, but that's where it's, if Dalton Kincaid does what Kelce did last year, if it was a 17-game season, like we said, and you get help from around him, the Bills are incredible next season.
Could be, yep.
I mean, like, because they're not in the same situation that Kansas City was. Yes, the Bills lost their number one wide receiver. But they have better receivers around Josh Allen than Mahomes did last year for the Chiefs.
Well, his receivers last year were atrocious at times. I mean, we know the Kadarius Toney thing. He became nearly unplayable due to mental mistakes.
Kind of a scapegoat, too.
Sky Moore was flat out unplayable, and he was a second-round pick for them.
Right.
It was Kelce and kind of just the offensive system they have there with Andy Reid that allowed them to keep going. They turn it on in the playoffs. I think you're right. Mahomes, once they had that those two high safety looks that we all kind of know came around after 20 and 21, where these big arm quarterbacks that were just taking shots over the top and annihilating defenses to it, all of a sudden you have those two high safety looks, and it was like, okay, well, you're going to have to beat us throwing the ball, you know, 10 yards past the line of scrimmage at most. Mahomes readily took to it.
Yeah.
He had no problem. Allen is still, I feel like, at times struggling with that. We saw a lot with the picks last year where he would just go deep a lot of times to Gabe Davis, and it was not working at all. You look at that Jet game, really, to open up the year, and that's kind of where it was like two of his interceptions of his three came targeting Gabe Davis. If the Bills receivers are more consistent, I think they'll be fine. I don't necessarily think they are going to need a number one wide receiver because, as I've brought up a number of times, I do think tight ends are becoming the more difference-making, to lack of a better phrase, position, where wide receivers you can kind of have by committee and do well with it. Maybe not great, but well with it. And if you have a great tight end, you can be really exceptional. That's my thing, but I don't want to bank on the hope that Kincaid is that guy until I know for sure Kincaid is that guy.
Let me give you some numbers real quick here.
Mm-hmm.
Ready? So these are their top receiving numbers. We'll give you the top five. 984, Travis Kelce. 938, Rashee Rice. 460.
That's the third highest receiver?
Mm-hmm. You know who that was? Justin Watson.
Their backup tight end, right?
Nope. He's a wide receiver.
Really? Oh, wow.
Yep. And he only started 8 games.
Huh.
Next one, 315, MVS, now Buffalo Bill. And fifth, Noah Gray at 305. My point there being, though, it's proven that with a great quarterback, you can have a subpar season and still win the Super Bowl. And granted, the Chiefs' defense was also very good.
Very good, yes. They have built a very, very good team.
In terms of the offense, Keon Coleman is better than Justin Watson. Curtis Samuel is better than Justin Watson.
Mm-hmm.
Khalil Shakir. Like, all MVS is on this team.
Yep.
So I'm trying, obviously you're comparing a last year's team to a this year's team and completely different players and all those variables and offensive coordinators as well. But I just think that if you look at these numbers and you told me this was a Super Bowl winning team, I would have a lot of questions.
Kind of the story with last year's Chiefs. It just made zero sense how far they made it and how well they played in the playoffs.
I guess my thesis here at the end of this all is that if Kincaid has this great season of 1,000 yards and you know, 5 touchdowns, but everyone around him is just good, good enough, then I think the Bills will have good success.
They'll be in a good spot to kind of continue.
Because it's one of those committee type things.
Yeah, I think it's right to point out the committee. I think it's also right to point out that a lot of those guys also showed out in the playoffs. Marquez Valdes-Scantling making big catches, right. Travis Kelce making big catches, where for years, as much as I love Stephon Diggs, and I do wish him success in Houston, a lot of times in these playoff losses, he was non-existent.
Yeah, and that's,
even
looking
at 13 seconds, for as great as Gabe Davis's game was, Diggs was almost a non-factor. And he's your number one wide receiver. It took a historic performance by the number two wide receiver to keep up in that game.
Right.
And then, of course, last year, his final game as a Bill is a major drop.
Yeah.
That could have swung the balance in that game. And
I think that's also the important part here.
Yes.
I'm looking at the regular season numbers.
Mm-hmm.
The Chiefs in the playoffs are completely different in terms of numbers and yards and things like that. So, obviously, something the Bills have had issues with lately is getting past the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
They've done great in the regular season and haven't gone far in the playoffs. So you hope this group can get over that hump and come up in these big games. But it's also not just the offense either. I'm just looking at the offense here because of how similar the two have been in terms of Chiefs and Bills. With the defenses, I mean, they're built very differently. They're both successful, but the Bills had a lot of injuries last year. I mean, you had fifth and sixth string tight ends going up against Travis Kelce. So, or I'm sorry,
linebackers.
Linebackers, not tight ends. You know what I meant. But yeah, I think it's just interesting to look at the comparisons and see how if Kincaid and Kelce have similar seasons, I could see the Bills still being fine.
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting.
And I mean more so in the fact of I think Kincaid can do that and make sure that the Bills are good.
Got to take a quick time out here. When we come back, an interesting wrinkle in the Copa America I want to bring up here before we are done for today. At 3 o'clock, Shope and the Bulldog will take over for the afternoon. But yeah, after a quick timeout, Copa America, a little bit interesting as we head into the knockout stage. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here for just one more segment. You're listening to WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here for quick final segment as we wrap up our edition of Wednesday here on WGR. Coming up, Mike Shope, Bulldog, still off until next week. He's enjoying a much-needed vacation in Spain. I'm not jealous. It's fine.
It's very really cool. I saw one of the photos he posted the other night at that bar somewhere in Malaga, I think it was.
I think so.
Malaga. I don't know how you say it, but
I looked amazing.
I'd love to go.
It looks so cool.
That'd be really cool.
But we have a lot of international tournaments going on. One of the countries that is advancing the Euros is, of course, Spain. Them and Germany, the host, Germany.
Oh, my God. I didn't even think about that.
Phenomenal. They look great.
I can't imagine that's
probably been a cool experience.
Yeah.
But for the international tournament going on closer to home here in America, the Copa America, the U.S. did not advance. Don't need to worry about that. But
It's 2:53 and Greg Berhalter is still employed.
He's still employed. The Copa America is going to have an interesting addition here to the knockout stage. They start in the quarterfinals. It's not as many teams as the Euros. And starting tomorrow with Argentina and Ecuador for the quarterfinals up until the championship game, there will be no extra time at the end of these games. If the game is tied, it will go right to a penalty shootout, where typically you would have the 90 minutes, injury time, and then two extra time periods to decide it. Now it's going to be the 90 minutes, injury time, right into the penalty shootout. And I love that. Let's get to the exciting part now.
Yeah, I kind of love that too, because every time it's gone to extra time, I'm like, all right, cool, this 15 minutes is going to be a lot. Oh, there's 15 more. Oh, my goodness.
And I just want to get to the stress that is penalty kicks.
I always thought that the extra time in soccer was way too long. Another half hour?
Yeah, I don't need that. I'm just get right to penalties. Well, that's the exciting
I'm okay
aspect.
With overtime. If you did 10-minute halves in
okay
extra time.
That. And again, this goes only till the championship game. The championship game would then have an extended period if still tied,
and then
they would go to penalties. This is just, no, let's bypass it to get there and go right to penalties. That's my favorite aspect of international soccer, especially watching those. The last World Cup was decided on penalties, and that was electric for Argentina versus France. I
was glued to my couch. I could not leave the room.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Speaking of U.S. soccer, do you see Tim Howard? He's going to try and lure Jurgen Klopp.
Yep, Jurgen Klopp out of Liverpool.
Listen,
that'd be fun.
He says 100%.
Tim Howard's my guy.
I think I could lure him over here.
He got big at Everton. Everton and Liverpool have their little
same town.
They have a huge rivalry.
Yep.
I'm glad he's putting it aside. Go, Timmy, go. Go get him. Bring him over here.
It'd be great. We'll see what
happens.
Sell
him on cheeseburgers, bacon, and chicken wings. But make sure there's blue cheese on the plate.
Of course. That's going to do it for me and Josh. Coming up next, Mike Shope with Bulldog on a vacation. Here we'll have Paul Hamilton at 3:30, and we'll also have Brett Boone coming up at 4 o'clock, so do stay tuned. You're listening to WGR.
Malaga? Yep. I don't know how you say it, but
I looked amazing.
I'd love to go.
It looks so cool.
That'd be really cool.
But we have a lot of international tournaments going on. One of the countries that is advancing the Euros is, of course, Spain. Them and Germany, the host, Germany.
Oh, my God. I didn't even think about that.
Phenomenal. They look great.
I can't imagine that's
probably been a cool experience.
Yeah.
But for the international tournament going on closer to home here in America, the Copa America, the U.S. did not advance. Don't need to worry about that. But
it's 2:53 and Greg Berhalter is still employed.
He's still employed.
the Copa America is going to have an interesting addition here to the knockout stage. They start in the quarterfinals. It's not as many teams as the Euros. And starting tomorrow with Argentina and Ecuador for the quarterfinals up until the championship game, there will be no extra time at the end of these games. If the game is tied, it will go right to a penalty kicks.
Penalty shootout,
where typically you would have the 90 minutes, injury time, and then two extra time periods to decide it. Now it's going to be the 90 minutes, injury time, right into the penalty shootout. And I love that. Let's get to the exciting part now.
Yeah, I kind of love that too, because every time it's gone to extra time, I'm like, all right, cool, this 15 minutes is going to be a lot. Oh, there's 15 more. Oh, my goodness.
And I just want to get to the stress that is penalty kicks.
I always thought that the extra time in soccer was way too long. Another half hour.
I don't need that. Yeah, I'm just get right to penalties. Well, that's the exciting
aspect. I'm okay
with
overtime. If you did 10-minute halves.
I'm
in
okay
extra
with
time.
It. And again, this goes only till the championship game. The championship game would then have an extended period if still tied.
And then
they would go to penalties. This is just, no, let's bypass it to get there and go right to penalties. That's my favorite aspect of international soccer, especially watching those. The last World Cup was decided on penalties, and that was electric for Argentina versus France.
I was glued to my couch. I could not leave the room.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Speaking of U.S. soccer, do you see Tim Howard? He's going to try and lure Jurgen Klopp.
Yep, Jurgen Klopp out of Liverpool.
Listen,
that'd be fun.
He says 100%.
Tim Howard's my guy.
I think I could lure him over here.
He got big at Everton. Everton and Liverpool have their little
same town.
They have a huge rivalry.
Yep.
I'm glad he's putting it aside. Go, Timmy, go. Go get him. Bring him over here.
It'd be great. We'll see what
happens.
Sell
him on cheeseburgers, bacon, and chicken wings. Make sure there's blue cheese on the plate.
Of course. That's going to do it for me and Josh. Coming up next, Mike Shope with Bulldog on a Vacation. Here we'll have Paul Hamilton at 3:30, and we'll also have Brett Boone coming up at 4 o'clock, so do stay tuned. You're listening to WGR.